I'm very, very connected to my Jewish story, my Jewish history. I'm a genealogy nut. If someone asked me, would you rather meet your great-great-grandparents or your great-great-grandchildren? I think most would say great-great-grandchildren. I want to meet the great-great-grandparents.
On In Good Faith, we believe that all faith traditions have something to teach us about how God is working in the world and in our lives. So join us as we listen and learn and discover how speaking with people of other faiths can strengthen our own faith and even our own practice. No one person can represent an entire people. We're all so different. People have asked me in European countries, so what do Americans think about, well, fill in the blank, with usually whoever the current president is or was, but it would be a completely different answer depending on which American they asked. Our guest today finds himself with the interesting challenge of programming a television station that represents all different kinds of Jewish life in a way that's accessible not just to Jewish people, but to anyone. That sounds like quite a challenge. Brad Pomerantz currently serves as both executive vice president and on-air host at Jewish Life Television, North America's largest and most robust 24/7 English language Jewish-themed television network. As on-air host, Brad is helming JLTV's newest television series, a celebrity-driven genealogy-themed television series called Generations. Previously, Brad has been honored with 3 Los Angeles area Emmy nominations for his work at Local Edition and Channel 35. When I read through the mission statement on the website, jltv.tv, you talk about humanization.
Right.
Just knowing people as people seems to be the biggest thing that can dissolve something like anti-Semitism, is that when you hear things, you think, wait, that's not like the people who I know and love, who are my neighbors, my friends, my whoever.
I'm so glad you brought that up, because I'm the guy trying to convince cable companies and other platforms to add JLTV to their channel lineups. And I have to be honest with you, our goal is to go to North Dakota. Our goal is to go to Kentucky. Our goal is to go to Mississippi.
Meaning,
we want to go to places where there are no Jews.
Right, right.
Because if they can see that we're just like anyone else, we're just a bunch of crazy, funny people that want to have a good time and have an interesting history. You know, if familiarity breeds a sense of intimacy, it doesn't breed contempt necessarily. But if you know someone, like you said, Steve, that you know they're Jewish, that doesn't line up with the character that we see on TV. And so we don't want to just be in Chicago, Philadelphia, New York, Miami, and Los Angeles. We want to be in Fargo.
Yeah, I'd love to know from people who aren't Jewish, perhaps, or don't live in places that are concentrated places of Jewish population. When they write to you, what did they say?
I got to tell you, Steve, our Christian viewers are amongst the nicest, kindest, most welcoming people. Our Jewish viewers are complaining and moaning and groaning. You can't do anything right. You're an embarrassment to your grandmother.
Kvetching in Yiddish.
Kvetching, that you got it right. Welcome to the truck. They're kvetching. And our Christian viewers are so thankful and kind. You know, JLTV is more a cultural network than a religious network. But during COVID, we added a one-hour Shabbat service, and we kept it. Most of the emails that we get about our Shabbat service, non-Jews.
Really?
Thanking us. Oh, yeah, because they're interested. I mean, look, a lot of folks in the Christian community, especially those that identify as evangelical, if they are truly evangelical in their hearts, they want to know. They want to learn. Jesus was Jewish. And Christianity, look, at a certain level, it's a spinoff of Judaism. I mean, if you ask very simply, someone will say to me, Steve, what's the difference between Christianity and Judaism? It's very simple. We're waiting for the Messiah. Christians believe he came. Most basic difference.
When someone pitches a show to you and it's going to take a certain amount of financial backing and investment, people have to believe in what its goal is. What are you looking for in a show?
This network, Jewish Life Television, is not for Jews. It's for Jews and everyone. It's a network for everyone. Mm-hmm. So it's critically important that the show be accessible to people of faith, and actually, even if they're not of faith. And as I mentioned, we're Jewish-themed. You know, that's a very broad definition. You know, there's kind of a Jewish ethos. It helps to tell the Jewish story in the most broad sense, but is also accessible and relatable to someone who may not be Jewish.
So what are you looking forward to, or are you allowed to say what's in development?
No, 100%. Look, I'm looking forward to doing more episodes of Generations. We're out looking for more supporters, more sponsors. I'm looking forward to doing more episodes of Air, Land, and Sea, which is the travel show that I host at JLTV. We have other original shows like Bubby's Know Best, Jewish Grandmothers Setting People Up on Dates. I know it's wonderful. And it's Jews and non-Jews alike. It's absolutely wonderful. And I'm looking forward to just, you know, continuing to have JLTV air in Montana, air in Indiana, air in rural Oregon. We're actually very well distributed in Salt Lake City, I must tell you.
Interesting. You started your career as an attorney. What's the path to where you are now?
So, yes, I was a lawyer and a successful one at that. I worked at a big prestigious law firm, and then I went to a studio, a big prestigious studio. But I had always thought that I wanted to become an elected official. That was always my passion, politics. And basically through, you know, in the 1990s in California, there was this big push towards term limits. And without getting too much into the advantages and disadvantages, for me, running for the state legislature and getting artificially kicked out in 6 years didn't feel so good. Politicians have careers too. And I mean, I don't know how people are supposed to run for office and then take a 6 year break. So it didn't work for me. And so I got very lucky. I started working in radio, and then I covered politics for many years. And it was a real gift. I interviewed congressmen and senators and mayors and supervisors and governors around the country. But I kind of noticed that not only did I enjoy the conversation about today, but I also enjoyed the conversation about yesterday. When my political show went away, I had been working part-time at JLTV, and I've continued now there full-time. And as you can see, the focus of my programming, genealogy, and I host a historically driven travel show, history is the theme. Yesterday is the theme.
Well, the show is Generations. And what is it that you're exploring? I mean, obviously people are saying, who do I come from? But what are you looking for from that?
Yeah, I thank you so much for that question. The Jewish story is a complicated and often tragic one. I think it's fair to say it was a tough millennia. It's a tough millennia for Jews.
Was there a good one?
it's been a tough 2,000 years. 3,500 now that I think about it. And so many of us, the story, it gets halted at the Holocaust because so many records were lost. What I would say about that, though, Steve, is that while it was a tough millennia, look, the resilience of the Jewish people is remarkable. We're still here. Mm-hmm. The Babylonians aren't here. The Mesopotamians aren't here. The Romans aren't here. So many people who tried to eliminate us aren't here. So what I'm trying to do with this show is to convey that sense of Jewish history. We're using celebrities as a vehicle to tell the history of the Jewish people. And it's also one that's not just the Holocaust. I mean, in our first episode with Cameron and Milo Manheim, she wound up having a relative who was in America during the Civil War, you know, and that was quite a story. We also did some DNA analysis, and Cameron has some deep matches in Afghanistan.
Which must have been a big surprise to her.
Huge surprise, because look, the irony of the Middle East conflict is I may look European, and yes, I descend from Europeans, but we're Middle Eastern.
Semitic peoples.
Yeah, we're Semitic. We're from the Middle East. Mm. The only reason I have blue eyes is because the Romans in 70 AD dragged a bunch of Jewish men into the Italian boot, and those Jewish men didn't have Jewish women to marry. And so they wound up marrying local wives who had blue eyes, and they were allowed to marry them for 300 years until Rome became Christian. And that's how blue eyes got into the Jewish faith. I mean, it's that simple. Otherwise, I'd look like every individual from Egypt or Lebanon. Mm-hmm.
What do you find it means to people when they find the surprising connections to where their genetics have come from?
Yeah, it's affirming and it's heartbreaking. And it's partially that because, look, I don't want anyone to take offense to what I'm about to say, but Jewish hate in the last millennia was really a Christian production. Mm-hmm. It was not a Muslim production. That's not to say that there weren't bumps in the last millennia with Islam and Judaism, but the overwhelming amount of persecution was by Christian forces. relations between Christians and Jews have really turned around in a lot of ways, especially since Vatican II, when the Pope said the Jews should be held responsible for the death of Jesus Christ. So we've repaired that relationship, and now relations between Jews and Muslims are suffering.
You think of, I guess you'd call them little golden eras that happened here and there. Like I was in Izmir in Turkey, and we went to the ruins of the big synagogue that...
Sardis.
Yeah, it was built as a thank you for what the local Jewish community had done for the community.
If I might digress, and you're a history nerd, I can tell, like me, I think you'll appreciate this. So as part of my travel show, we went to Turkey, and we did the history of Turkish Jewry. After the King and Queen of Spain expelled the Jews in 1492, and the Portuguese did the same a few years later, the Sultan of Turkey sent an armada of ships to the Spanish shores and said, if Spain's going to kick out the Jews, lucky me, I'm going to take them. And took 150,000 Jews off Spanish shores and brought them to the Ottoman Empire. That's Ottoman Jewry. And those Ottoman Jews helped to build the Ottoman Empire. Jewish life thrived. And to the extent that Jews left Turkey with the creation of the State of Israel, they weren't really kicked out. You know, relations got bumpy between Muslim and Jews, but Turkey didn't want them to leave. It was more about kind of Zionism and a desire to help foster the Jewish state. But the story of Turkish Jewry is stunning in so many ways.
Okay, well, now I have to check out the travel show as well.
I'll send you some links.
Tell me about the founding of Jewish Life Television.
It was founded by a man named Phil Blazer of blessed memory. We lost him in 2020. He saw a space for Jewish-themed television that was accessible to all people. And he launched it in the 2000s, and it's a journey. I mean, it's a journey. We still need advertiser support and sponsorship support, and we're a niche network. And I'm just going to be honest, Steve, you know, since October 7th, it's been particularly challenging. You know, certain advertisers don't want to be aligned with Jewish, whatever that may mean.
I'd like to get your take. I'm not asking you to represent all of the Jewish population of the world.
Right. Well, if I may interrupt, I don't know if you know the cliche, two Jews, three opinions.
Oh, yes, I have.
Yeah, okay. So, yeah, even if I wanted to, it wouldn't work. But continue, sir.
We'll ask you for a couple of opinions on the same subject.
Right.
So there is this unique thing you talked about, that Judaism can be an ethnicity.
Right.
It can be a faith. Also, it can be something people convert to. And so one thing that my experience is that you can go to a synagogue and you have people who are culturally Jewish, don't know if they believe in God. You, in the same synagogue, have the people who are there for faith, the faith of their fathers, and neither of them are trying to kick each other out or change each other. How have you become so good at that?
I know. It is pretty remarkable. I can count on multiple hands the number of people I know that proudly define themselves as Jewish atheists or Jewish agnostics. I know people that are heavily involved in Jewish life that, if you really push them, probably atheists, maybe agnostic, you know, it's hard to say. Don't know.
They find a connection to the culture that's worth preserving to them.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, look, I don't know what it's going to be like in a few hundred years, but it's hard to deny that for my generation, our generation, a little older, a little younger, we have been really inculcated with, they killed 6 million of us. We got to keep this alive. And so that weighs strongly on us that we really need to perpetuate the people. Demographers grapple, but it doesn't appear that we have reached 1939 levels in the world. Some say we have, some say we haven't. And there are many people that would prefer that we don't. But I just want to remind you, Steve, that there are maybe 15 million Jews in the world, 0.2% of the world. 2% of America is Jewish. We really are a very, very small people. I mean, Israel is the size of New Jersey, both as a landmass and as a population. I mean, how many countries of 10 million people get as much attention as Israel? And not to minimize what's happening in Gaza, it's heartbreaking. But what about what's happened in Syria, in South Sudan, in Yemen, in Nigeria. I mean, I wish there would be as much outrage about the human rights violations that have happened in other places that are allegedly happening in Gaza or Israel, whatever it may be.
I'm wondering if I can have the drone zoom down from 30,000 feet to maybe 100 feet for Brad Pomerantz.
So I am the descendant of European Jews. Both my parents were born in America. Their parents or grandparents were born in Eastern and Central Europe, mostly Polish lands and Hungary. My father specifically was the child of immigrants. His first language was Yiddish, which is the language spoken by Eastern European Jews. My mother had a more secular upbringing, but both are Jewish. And as a result, I was raised in kind of a traditional 20th century Jewish American home. They were raised in New York. I was raised in Los Angeles. Jewish life was a significant part of my upbringing in that they were involved in Jewish organizations like B'nai B'rith, kind of like the center of our social structure. And we were also part of a synagogue. And I was involved in Jewish youth groups growing up. I went to Jewish camps. I did go to a secular school, not a Jewish day school. When you ask, what role did faith play in your life growing up? I would need to add kind of faith, ethnicity, and culture, because they're all kind of wrapped up into one. And it played a significant part in my life, if you consider that troika.
And is there anything specific about being Jewish American as opposed to in some other place? Maybe that changes depending what stage our culture is in, because we've seen things swing back and forth.
Right. These are very, very difficult days for the Jewish American community. I cannot lie. I was living blissfully before October 7th, thinking that anti-Semitism was a problem on the margins and mostly on the right. Boy, was I wrong. Mm. Anti-Semitism is thriving on the right and the left. And right now, it's really seeing its day in the sun on the left. My daughters are university students. They are facing anti-Semitism, both overt and covert. I'm fairly active on Twitter. I get a lot of hate on Twitter. I mean, a massive amount of hate, because I tweet often about issues relating to Jewishness and Israel. The things that I've been called since October 7th are unspeakable and heartbreaking, really heartbreaking. I think America has been the most welcoming country to Jews in the history of the world. I am a proud American, a proud Jewish American. But here's another thing, if I may. I mean, it's remarkable to me how many people somehow think that Judaism is a nationality. Mm. Israeli is a nationality. Judaism is not a nationality. I'm American, period. My faith is Jewish. My religion is Jewish. My culture is Jewish. I'm loyal to the United States of America. That doesn't mean I don't support the state of Israel and love the state of Israel. But I'm American, and I can't believe how many people confuse that. Yes. It's like the madness of it all. Those are concepts from the 18th, 19th century, not the 20th and the 21st century.
So you are a proud American. You're also Jewish. And what connects you to that tradition?
I hear Yiddish, even though I don't speak it, and it touches my soul. I hope Yiddish survives. I wouldn't call it a beautiful language. Ladino, which is the language of Sephardic Jews, Spanish and Iberian Portuguese Jews, that's a beautiful language. That I would call like Shakespearean Spanish. That's a beautiful language. Yiddish, not so much. Yiddish is mostly a German dialect, and God bless our German friends, but not the prettiest language. But Yiddish touches me. There's a song in Hebrew, it's called the Misha Berach, which is a song, I can't even cry thinking about it, which is a song that you sing when you seek healing. Mm. for a loved one. It gets me a little teary to think about, but I lost my mother a few years ago, and my aunt says she was at temple praying for her. And it was at the end of the Misha Berach that she got word that my mom had passed. That song sticks with me. And so it's a song that I've known, you know, for a very long time. I'm very, very connected to my Jewish story, my Jewish history. I'm a genealogy nut. If someone asked me, would you rather meet your great-great-grandparents or your great-great-grandchildren? I think most would say great-great-grandchildren. I want to meet the great-great-grandparents.
Go back into the past, yeah, into the history.
Yeah.
Half of my heritage is from the Netherlands. And yes, I even bought my own wooden shoes when I lived there for a while. The stereotype is always jolly, happy Dutch people in wooden shoes making cheese inside a windmill. But if I could go back in time, the ancestor I want to meet is a great-great-grandfather who was trying to earn money to get his entire family to the U.S. Now, lots of people had horses that would pull their barges along the canal banks. But this ancestor of mine put the straps on himself and hired out to pull those barges, a way to earn money. As an old man, he laughed about being so tired from pulling the barges that he would fall asleep and fall into the canal, which, he said, woke him up very quickly. And then, after finally getting to the U.S., he lived here in a tent while he worked to save money to bring over his 11 siblings one by one, which he did, and finally his parents. So yes, I get why you would want to meet your ancestors. I think it's obvious that you feel like a religious or representation of religious people or of people who belong to a tradition like this impacts the way people understand those people because we see them portrayed in certain ways. Do you see those representations outside of what you're doing changing in the last 10 years, 15 years?
Well, what's so interesting about the Jewish people is we look very different. We're not all white Europeans. You go to Israel, half of Israel is brown. I'm not really sure what word to use, but they're Middle Eastern. I mean, remember that when the State of Israel was founded, 1 million Jews living in Arab lands were expelled. They're dark-complected. And then there's the Orthodox, who look very traditional. Look at pop culture. You often see the neurotic Jew, the Seinfeld type Jew. And that's funny. You know, it's funny. And it's not necessarily inaccurate, but that really is just one type of Jew that probably is from New York, New Jersey, or Connecticut, but definitely not Raleigh, you know, definitely not Dallas, not even Chicago or San Francisco. You know, we really are very diverse.
And I've met Ethiopian Jews.
Exactly. I was just going to say that. They are African. And then people of Turkish descent. So we are not monolithic in any stretch. Just because all the Jews you metaphorically may know look like me or a version of me, that's not who we are.
I wonder what I should ask you that I don't know to ask.
Well, that's a great question. As we speak today, and I don't want this to come off dramatic, but you should ask me, how are you doing? Because the answer is, life is good. We're lucky to be in America, but Jews are not doing well. Jewish Americans are not doing well. We are crushed by how so many of our allies have turned on us, by the attacks that have gone on both verbally and physically, be it in DC, in Boulder, in Pittsburgh, in Poway, in Brooklyn, in Los Angeles.
What can people do?
And say something, say something. My entire life, Jews have always tried to be allies because we felt as if we're allies, it will be reciprocated. Now, that doesn't mean that's why you're an ally, but still.
Yeah, you hope the result would be.
So just stand up. Say, this is not acceptable. This is not acceptable. Even though a Jewish American may support Israel's right to exist, Jewish Americans cannot be blamed for the actions of Israel, just like Catholic Americans can't be blamed for the actions of the Vatican.
It sounds like it would be a good thing if you have Jewish neighbors or friends to just say, how are you?
How are you? How can I support you? Be circumspect about what the media says about what's happening in the Middle East.
Many thanks to Brad Pomerantz for speaking with me. This episode was produced by Aaliyah Alexander. Our production team also includes Heather Bigley, Heidi Clough, Nick Levitt, and Ocean Marshall. Our post-production sound designers are Mark Hansen and DJ Cromarty. In Good Faith is committed to the idea that we all benefit from hearing people of widely varying backgrounds share their personal experience with faith and belief. In fact, we think people with such experience deserve some of our best listening. Find us on Instagram and Facebook at In Good Faith Podcast and subscribe to our YouTube channel for extended interviews. In Good Faith is a production of BYU Radio. I'm Stephen Cap Perry. I hope you join me again soon, right here, in Good Faith. There is power in stories. They inspire us. They help us see ways we might try doing things. And sometimes a story will even tell us not to go down that particular path. And it's nice to learn that from a story or a conversation before you experience it yourself. Hi, Stephen Cap Perry here from the In Good Faith podcast. I love stories because what they teach me about people, about God, about politics, about everything. And I hope you will check out the brand new podcast, Uncomfy, Sticking with Moments That Challenge Us. There is so much to learn from the stories of these guests because they are people who found themselves in an uncomfortable moment. They could have just left the situation, written off the people they disagreed with, but instead they made something beautiful out of it. And you can learn how, and I know you'll like the stories. This is hosted by Julie Rose, the host of Top of Mind. She does a great job, and I know you'll love the guests and their stories. Check out Uncomfy.